Yael Osowski now with us on the Hot Talk Hotline from the Consumer Choice Center at consumerchoicecenter.org, from D.C. up to the Big Apple and now back at home base in Vienna, Austria. You're no stranger, Yael. You are no stranger to the cold weather and the snow, are you, my friend?
No, not at all. And I did not know I was talking to Joe Katz, meteorologist, this morning. I love this new side of you, Joe.
Well, I just read verbatim what the local meteorologist posted on his. So I do not take credit for all of those meteorological terms that I just spewed out to the listeners out there, my friend. But, Yael, you were in D.C., what, last week? And then, as I mentioned, up to New York City for a day or two. Did you take any of the public transportation? Did you get anything free from Mayor Mamdani while you were up in our nation's biggest city?
Well, I figured we might as well give your listeners here a nice little ride on what it was like. So I tried to do as much public transportation to provide a report just for you guys here on the radio, if that's okay, Joe. All
right,
so let's start. I actually took the train from D.C. up to New York City, took the Amtrak. So it's technically called the Acela train, the fastest passenger train rail in the country. It takes about 3 hours from D.C. Union Station up to Penn Station in New York City. And after that, just kind of stayed around Times Square. And I did take the subway later in the week to the JFK airport. And I have to say, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't cheap. Believe me, I had to pay, I think, up to $8, which might not be bad when you compare it to the price of an Uber. But overall, it wasn't bad. And I guess the full Mamdani effect is not really in order yet. But I did escape the city, I think, just a few hours before the snowpocalypse happened. But I think I had a pretty good time. You know, I don't take too much public transport in Washington, D.C., just because it's so easy to walk around and get your steps in. But having done the subway, look, it's old. It's one of the oldest subway systems in the world. They could probably use a little bit of help, a little bit of technological innovation. But, you know, wasn't too bad. I did not get mugged, I guess, which is the most important factor.
Well, I mean, you're not living the way a New Yorker is living if you didn't jump the turnstile to get into the subway and avoid paying that $8 on your Metro card. So you're not living quite like a New Yorker just yet. You were one of those law-abiding tourists and paid your fare as required.
Yeah, and I think one thing I've noticed, and this exists in fairly large cities throughout the country, you have basically the ability to use your credit card and just kind of like slap it down and then the door opens. So they have that for the AirTrain, which I think is pretty cool. They do not have it on the rest of the subway things. So I think these gentlemen who happen to be jumping the turnstile, they just don't know where to put their credit card, Joe. That might be the issue.
Yeah, something like that. Or your credit card after they pickpocket you while walking and bumping into you on the streets of New York. Not that that happens ever in the Big Apple or any other big city across the country. Yeah, that's why you always keep your money in a clip and in your front pocket, just in case they do lift your wallet, Yael. You still have recourse there, along with your phone, which could, of course, through Google Wallet or Apple Pay, can do the same thing as your debit or credit card. All right, the cold temperatures have been here, Yael, for quite some time. We had a snowstorm that impacted the eastern half of the country last week, an impending snowstorm this week for the eastern seaboard. In our hour of need, where is our energy going to come to keep our houses warm so long as the power remains on as we get ready for another winter get-in type of event along the Atlantic seaboard?
Yeah, I think South Carolina, you guys are going to be good. Not that you're going to have the biggest of snowstorms ever, but those of you in Myrtle Beach who are taking your toes out of the sand, very happy to know you're still pumping out a good 55% nuclear energy. So this is stuff that's already been generated. It's along the transmission lines. These are ready to serve all the homes there. Actually, it's about half that number right now in North Carolina, just north of the border. Still a good amount of natural gas, 23%. Right now, so that's what's happening. And then you have a little bit of coal, 15%. That's more up towards the northeast, so just above, just north of the Myrtle Beach area. Only 7% renewables, 4% solar, and 3% some of those biofuels. So we've seen through many other states, if we look at the northeast, if we look at New England, they've had a lot of issues. And the main issues that they've had is they thought they could just skate on by on renewables throughout the entire winter. But when you have one of these freak events, you got a big snowstorm, you need to rely on the big guns. And in this case, the big guns are natural gas, coal, and oil. And that's especially what happened in Massachusetts. We saw the same in Vermont and also in New York State. And a lot of these places thought they could get some cheap hydropower, you know, some of those big dams that they have up north in Quebec. They thought they could rely on that. But when temperatures drop too low and you have too much precipitation, you're not able to deliver that energy, and you have to rely on the good stuff, the fossil fuels. And thankfully, because of fossil fuels, you have states like Michigan, New York, as I mentioned, Wisconsin. They were able to kind of actually be okay here because they had those connections and were able to stay warm. It's just another instance where we don't think about it too much, but everyone talks about getting rid of fossil fuels. This is kind of what our society is dependent on right now, especially for our heat, and especially when we're talking about winter storms and all the things that we're not really prepared for most of the time.
And I know a few years ago, what was it, back in like 2021, you know, Texas got a lot of grief because there were, you know, tons of blackouts and power outages as it relates to their electrical grid essentially failing because it couldn't keep up with the cold weather, which is another rarity in the Lone Star State. They got another snap of cold weather this past week, along with some ice and snow accompanied with that and those frigid temperatures. Did Texas hold up this time? And to your knowledge, did anything change from 2021 to now here in 2026 that helped them weather the storm, so to speak?
So Texas is very special. They have their own energy grid. It's called ERCOT. Very good information you can find online about ERCOT. So in that particular instance, when you're talking about the winter storms, they have something called a demand response program. So people who are big energy guzzlers, when it's a normal time, whenever they need to turn off, what the ERCOT system administrators do is they actually send out payments to those people to shut down their power, and that allows more power to be driven to other communities that might need it. Now, during the winter storm, they weren't as prepared. You know, they didn't have all of that energy backed up in their transmission stations. So they weren't able to do it. This time, they were fully loaded with the natural gas. They had all of that energy. They had a little bit of solar they had left over. So they actually were very prepared, and they did fairly well. Again, Texas is not the place you think of the most that's hit by these winter storms, but it does impact them when you're not used to them. This time, though, they held up incredibly well. You didn't have all the outages. You didn't have people lining up for generators like crazy. And I think that speaks to just the impressiveness of the system, the way it's built up. And also the fossil fuels that are underlining it. I mean, there's just so much that we're able to do in our lives every day because of fossil fuels, and there's nothing that shows that more than in a terrible winter storm when you still, you know, put on that little hot pocket in the microwave and the electricity works.
So you should have some confidence, in terms of being able to stay with the power on, come winter weather now when it ices and then those transmission lines are snapped. There's nothing much you could do in terms of, capacity and being able to get that energy from the power plants to where they need to go, meaning your home. So there's nothing you can do other than put the transmission lines underground, which a lot of our newer neighborhoods have as a way to mitigate outages during things like hurricanes, for instance, or when these rare ice events come. In terms of cost, when it looks like highest versus lowest electricity costs in our country, is it ironic that the places that have gone the way of or away from fossil fuels more for the quote unquote clean renewable energy, is there a correlation there between cost when we talk about states that pay the highest rates of electricity in our country?
You definitely do see a little bit of a chart. So I mentioned the state of New York. They've had raising energy prices for a very long time. They used to have a nuclear power station, but it's called Indian Point. That was shut down. So they are heavily reliant on that hydropower that's coming up from Quebec and then also natural gas. So there you have had a big spike. In some of these other areas, too, particularly in the Northeast, you have plentiful energy and you have plentiful transmission lines. A lot of the issues have to do just with poor planning when it comes to some of the administrators. So you have seen the highest energy cost up in the Northeast. And again, it's not for lack of bountiful energy, power, and electricity, because you got plenty of that. You just have a lot of local mandates that they're not able to use as much natural gas. They're not able to use as much fossil fuels. So you have seen a lot of higher energy prices, particularly in the Northeast. Also in California. California generally always has very high kilowatt hours, which again makes no sense because they got plenty of rivers. They still have the Diablo Canyon nuclear station. The problem is that California doesn't spend its money on those transmission lines, on kind of the upkeep of the electricity system. They have a lot of brownouts. There's just a lot of mismanagement, and that makes it so that all of that, you know, we'll call it administrative corruption, that increases your power bill. And there's been a lot of issues with that in California, still contending with it. One of the most beautiful places in the country, but still not able to actually figure out how to administer energy. You know, we're not even talking about Enron stuff anymore. A lot of it is actually bureaucracy, local rules that make it difficult to generate more power. And then a lot of the climate change sort of regulations that make it so that we want to be energy neutral, carbon neutral, and that means that we're going to limit those sources. And that makes it so it is more expensive. So those places that embrace things like natural gas, those things that embrace that great energy that comes out up out of the ground, they always have much cheaper energy. And you add that with nuclear, again, that's why a lot of places in the Southeast, particularly South Carolina, do fairly well when compared to their neighbors.
We're talking cost, we're talking consumption here with Yael Lisowski, all related to energy, given the fact that, our heaters have been on, our heat pumps have been on a little bit longer than usual here through this winter with another winter storm coming up. Wind chill factor will make it feel like it's zero this upcoming weekend outside, and there's no reason why we cannot and should not continue to explore expanding our portfolio across the board, but particularly as it relates to nuclear, natural gas, coal, as Yael has laid out. As South Carolina continues to grow, just two more questions before I let you go. As we continue to grow, we gained 80,000 residents, fastest growing state percentage-wise all the country last year. What does South Carolina need to do or need to continue to do to push for increased capacity as we grow further and further? We've got these AI data centers popping up. What do we continue to need to do to make sure that we're prepared from an energy consumption standpoint to keep those costs down and keep that energy abundant for consumption?
Well, that's a great question, Joe, because it really comes down to good local planning. I think one reason why a lot of people tune into your show is because you're very attuned to the local community and what's happening and who the elected leaders are and what the important issues are. And this is the moment where those local rules matter. So when you're talking about development and you're talking about the ability to build new transformers, new transmission lines, when you're talking about the ability to build new homes and be sure that zoning is kept up and essentially can be flexible so that people can build new homes, you're going to need that. Because if you're going to have a lot of people who are just bundled up into apartments or people who are going to be generally just in the big cities, you're going to have a lot of energy choke points. That's going to make it more difficult, more expensive. You know, you have to pay to get a lot of that energy there. So the more that the local, let's say, city councils, town councils, county commissions, the more that they can be attuned to the growing nature of South Carolina and those needs, and they can rubber stamp a lot of these development projects. Obviously, Democratic input, super important. If there are projects, you know, that would probably railroad something or take over your house, as we've seen with a lot of eminent domain cases, that's a reason for you to get involved in the local process. And people can be holding their city council to account if they aren't making those investments and aren't thinking about it. You know, you do pay city taxes, you do pay county taxes, and you have a say as much as anyone else. So it's really important to stay engaged, be sure that the leaders are keeping up to date on those figures, on infrastructure. And those who are taking risks, being entrepreneurs, trying to develop things, trying to build new things, you know, these are not the enemies of progress. These are people who are bringing us progress. So that can be directed by democracy, by input, by city council vote, by, you know, these public comment periods. But being sure that we can grow that infrastructure, that capacity, it's important for us, not just as residents, but, you know, consumers buying and selling and trying to understand how to use goods and services, feed our families, be sure we have cheaper energy prices. That's what we need from really our local city councils, from our county commissions. It helps to have very good local leadership and have people tuned in to programs like this where you can at least debate these topics.
Yael Lisowski with the Consumer Choice Center wrapping it up here this morning. And as I hinted just a moment ago, we're seeing unprecedented growth as it relates to tech companies and these AI data centers that are popping up all over the country. Has that led to an uptick in utility rates for customers across our country? And if it has, should these tech companies be ponying up along with the utility companies to increase this growth, or should it be on the back of the ratepayer?
Yeah, it should always be on the back of the rate payer. There's no question. You know, if you're using more, you pay per your usage, your kilowatt hours. You know, the results are kind of mixed, and it depends where. You know, where you've had a lot of building and they've put new data centers in and then branched things up and have had to build transmission lines and raise money through infrastructure. You have seen some prices go up, but where a lot of those transmission lines, power stations are already established, all you've had is you've hooked up a new customer who's paying market price. So nobody's getting any discounts or anything like this. And in many cases, some of the data centers are coming with sort of their own energy infrastructure. So I would say it's mixed. You know, we're following it a bit in South Carolina and Kentucky and Kansas. There's been a lot of questions about that. But new data centers are just new customers, and oftentimes they're bringing new investment to upgrade infrastructure. So it's a bit hazy. It's hard to see at the moment. There's a lot of local political battles in states like Virginia, people who are very opposed to it just because they don't like data centers. But again, this is a new customer, and it normally is a very good employment opportunity, particularly when it comes to construction and everything else. There are always going to be battles about where these things are located and what kind of infrastructure is used. But I would say the results so far are mixed. I mean, we're definitely getting a lot of huge growth in the AI market, compute market, everything having to do with the online economy. And that's thanks to these data centers. But, of course, you got to keep local people in mind. And, again, that's why those city councils, local county commissions, very important. Let people know your voice. And I think there that's how we're going to have the best mix to make us all a bit more prosperous going forward.
You want to read more about the global grassroots movement for consumer choice, go over to their website at consumerchoicecenter.org. Good information and perspective here this morning, as always, from my friend Yael Osowski out in Vienna, Austria here this morning. Just sounds like he's right next to us in studio here today. Modern technology at its finest. Yael, thanks for the time. We'll catch up in a few weeks.
Absolutely, Joe. All the best to you.
All right, it's 8:54 here on Hot Talk 99.5, consumerchoicecenter.org.